Welcome to the Final Draft Podcast. My name is Andrew Popel, and today I am joined on the show by AJ Betts. Now, the Final Draft Podcast, it's all about books, writing, and literary culture. Every week I broadcast Final Draft from the studios of 2SER in Sydney. We're in Australia. If you are joining us from overseas, welcome. Now, at Final Draft, we are dedicated to exploring Australian writing, from debut authors to the classics that you know and love. We take these conversations as a chance to look at the issues that drive the author's storytelling. It's a way to help you discover more from the books you love, because these are the stories that make us who we are. So 2SER broadcasts from the lands of the Gadigal people. I'm recording on the lands of the Darug and Gunungurra people. I want to acknowledge the traditional owners of those lands and pay my respects to their ongoing connection to their lands, acknowledging that these are unceded lands and that treaty has never been made with Australia's First Nations. Today, I'm joined on the show by AJ Betts. Her new novel is One Song. Just imagine your dreams laid out in front of you. That is the situation for the characters in One Song, and they have one weekend to make it all happen. This is a novel about music. It is a novel about friendship. It is a novel about just absolutely going for it. So join me as we discover AJ Betts' One Song. My name's Andrew Popel, and right now I am joined on the show by AJ Betts. AJ Betts is a teacher, a speaker, and author of young adult fiction. Her books include Zack and Mia, which has been adapted into a hit streaming series. Today, she is joining us with her new novel. It is called One Song. AJ, thank you so much. It's great to be having you join us.
Oh, it's good to meet you. Thanks, Andrew.
And I'm super excited because it's a book show, but we get to talk about music. That's if that wasn't clear from the title, One Song. Now I just have to get the music shows to talk more about books. But let's land in a tiny studio somewhere on the West Coast. Eva has entered Unearthed High in years 9, 10, and 11. And now, year 12, she's got one last chance to break into music before she's too old, before the world's left her behind. Eva's always been a soloist, but Cooper Hunter's convinced her to form a band. Bands are good. Bands can win. But how do you even begin wrangling three other teenagers to write music, especially when your muse is playing guitar next to you? All right. This is great. This is a book about music. I'm excited to talk about music. But it's also about creativity and the ways that people can come together and support each other. Thinking about that sort of bigger picture, what inspired you to focus in? What inspired you to make this about a band?
Oh, Andrew, my ideas come from the most random things. So it was never a deliberate decision that I made. Honestly, I was just listening to Triple J back in 2017. It was Friday afternoon. I was washing the dishes for some reason on a Friday afternoon. I'm a very rock star life, as you can tell. And I was listening to Triple J and I heard the DJ say this: if you're in high school and if you're a solo artist or if you're in a band, don't forget you've only got this weekend to finish off your songs for Triple J Unearthed High. Entries close on Monday, so hurry up and get your entries in. So as I said, I'd been washing the dishes and I just froze. Because four characters just jumped into my head. I didn't know who they were, but I just knew they were holding instruments and looking at each other going, we've got one weekend to make a song. So, yeah, then at the time I was working on my books, Hive and Rogue, but then in 2019 I started on this book properly and by then I'd developed a sense of who these characters are and why they really wanted to win Triple J Unearthed High. So that's where the idea came from. I must confess I know very little about music. I've never been in a band. I can't play an instrument. So I thought, well, this is going to be a challenge, so I'm going to have to learn all I can. So that's where the idea came from, listening to Triple J.
That is such a gorgeous seed of an idea. And I think one of the things that I like most about it is, without knowing exactly who that announcer was, and without, you know, I haven't worked at Triple J, but I know a little bit about what happens at radio stations, that thing that you heard was probably very much a part of a script, or at least a note that that announcer and all the announcers got. And much like, you know, probably I don't want to over-egg this, but much like a band, the announcers then, they take this message they have to get out and they just do their own little variation around it. We all do it. We all know what we have to say, the call sign, the top of the hour, that stuff like that. And we just vary around it. And I think that has a certain creativity that we're going to get into. I'm so interested that you're not a muso and that you don't have like a secret kind of, you know, 8-track waiting to be released.
That would be great if I could release it at the same time. Wouldn't it be a great tie-in? Say, hello world, I'm also this amazing muso. Sadly, it's not true. It's it'd be this wish, you know, this desire, this dream that I would have to be some cool muso. And I never had, I was busy at high school doing other things. And, but I envied these people in bands and I still kind of do. So in a way, it's me living an alternate and more cool life.
You've nailed the music for the book from like the early noughties and the contemporaries of, we haven't properly introduced all the characters, but Cooper Hunter, one of the key characters, it's his little cabana / studio that the action happens in. Cooper's dad's band, Polyhedron, from the early to mid-noughties, through to the current crop of artists that get referenced on, you know, these are the artists that are breaking on stations like 2SER and Triple J, but you know. 2SER. So what are you listening to at the moment? This is not related to the book necessarily at all.
Yeah, thanks. I listen to all kinds of things. If I'm working, like writing or even doing emails, I can't listen to music with words in it. I have SBS Chill on in the background sometimes, or just some ambient music. But otherwise, I listen to just my local radio stations, and I do really love Aussie indie music. So when I was a teenager and when I was in my 20s and going through, you know, through uni, there was a lot of Triple J on all the time. It was one of my staples. And in fact, when I went and lived in the UK for a while, it was the thing I missed most. So I was one of those Aussies in London wearing a Triple J t-shirt and having all the Triple J merch on just to say any other Aussies around. So I still, those bands that you were talking about from the noughties, they were so instrumental. Oh, I didn't mean that pun. They were so instrumental to my identity and my growth. And so now I still listen to them. You know, of course, Powderfinger, I'm from Brisbane originally. So that's one of my home bands, but I love listening to the, like you say, the new generation that we get to hear on Triple J. So actually I've created, I don't know if you know this, Andrew, but I've created a Spotify playlist to go along with one song, which features a lot of the young artists I was listening to while I was researching and writing. Some of them have won Triple J Unearthed High in the past. So like Stonefield and Aster and Greta Ray and Montaigne and Ruby Fields and this, yeah, really cool young artists making great music. So to be honest, I'm listening to a lot of that at the moment, just for fun now. The book's done, but I just get to, yeah, I really enjoy it.
Incredible. Like I've looked it up. I've just been, while you were chatting, I've been looking it up because we love a playlist to go along with our reading here. Am I looking at this right? Have you crafted an individual sort of playlist? Like it's a locked playlist that goes around each chapter? That's sort of how it's popping up for me. It's not popping up with the actual the bands. It's just like, oh, this, okay.
What's going on there? I'm hoping you're seeing mine. It starts with the Greta Ray song and then the Cub Sport, but I can double check that.
Oh, no, hang on. You know what I've found? Oh, we're going to have to cut this. This is for the podcast. See, you've got a playlist that's got the word song in it on a music site. So there are a few. I had to scroll right down to find one song, but I've actually found the book. Sorry. That's why it's locked.
Oh, wow.
I found the book. We're going to keep going.
It's an audio book. I haven't listened to it yet.
It's locked to me so far until I buy it. And you know what? I'm going to have to. Great radio here. Thank you, everyone, for staying tuned. We'll find it later.
That's fine. So it's, it's called One Song. And I think it's got AJ Betts attached to it. So,
Well, we know that the audiobook is also there. And so we've got the band. Eva is dead set on winning Unearthed High. And she is stressing out, though, about how she's going to get her band, the Errants, to record their Unearthed High entry, Tongue Twisted, in a weekend. And it all goes pear-shaped when Ruby confronts Eva with some harsh truths about the song. And the band goes into lockdown. The band goes into lock-in. There's so much to take in here, but I actually wanted to pick up on a recent Guardian article that you penned where you discussed a tension between creativity and performance. And I'm thinking here about, you know, achieving something performance, how this can paralyze particularly teenagers who are led to believe that being creative just isn't going to get them far in life. How did you want to explore this in One Song?
Yeah, I remember what it's like to be a teenager and have these dreams. I loved writing and I loved drama and dance and other things, and I'd grown up loving these and having these big hopes and big passions. But then you get to year 12 and everyone's saying, all right, party's over, time to wake up and join the real world. You can't follow these creative pursuits because they're not realistic, really. So I wanted to explore that from Eva's perspective and how hard that is and why it's so unfair to be telling young people that creativity isn't a viable pursuit in the real world and also isn't valuable because we are surrounded by the fruits of creative thinking, whether that's in engineering or architecture or music or whichever endeavor. Creativity is so important. And so there's this myth going around that, hit the real world, creativity has no real value. So for Eva, for her, she is a really good songwriter. She has this passion, but she's also pretty good at it. She's lacking confidence because, you know, being 17 and being a sensitive type, she's lacking confidence that this is really important or any good. So I wanted to explore that for her and what that feels like and really give her a little bit of a shake up in this story as well. And show her how amazing she can be and how she has this talent and it's something worthwhile, worth pursuing. So, yeah, I guess this is the book which really explores creativity and what it means and how hard it is to live a creative life because I'm not a teenager anymore. I'm well into my 40s, but I'm still struggling with how do I live this creative life and how do I make this a viable profession for me? And it's not easy. It's not easy to do it financially, but it's also not easy to do it emotionally because every time I write something, A, I don't know what I'm doing, and B, I am putting myself on the line. I'm showing so much of myself and being exposing myself in a way that is scary. So yeah, living a creative life is scary and it's vulnerable and it's uncertain, but I don't want to do anything else, to be honest. And I'm putting these kind of thoughts and feelings into Eva, my gorgeous little protagonist, and giving her an injection of hope, really. The book, more than anything, is really about hope and pursuing something that matters to you. Yeah.
It feels like such a double bind as well. In the Guardian article, and I think very much in Eva's story in One Song, we look at how we're not necessarily encouraged to be creative. We're not told that it's valuable. But the flip of that is also it feels so yuck where people that are trying to be creative have that characterized then as a side hustle and you're supposed to monetize your side hustle. And where does value sit? Because, you know, apparently if you're not making money, then things aren't valuable. And finding that space to create that is for you. And there's nothing wrong with making money out of your creativity. But to feel like that's the only purpose of it also feels like a missed opportunity.
Absolutely. And it's so sad hearing you say that. It just reminded me of a number of times I've been in schools. So I talk a lot in schools and at festivals, but in a number of schools I've had some, by a number, I should say it's a small number. And I have to admit, these are often at very wealthy schools as well. I have students who look at me and say, yeah, but what's your net worth? I've actually been asked, what's your net worth? And then I go into this long talk about what worth is and what value is and what matters to me, because unfortunately we're getting, as you say, with what is valuable, we're getting this drummed into us that you're only valuable if you've got, you know, a certain income or some investment properties. And whereas that's so shallow and so sad. I see so many young people who are disenchanted and disappointed because they don't want to turn out like the people that they see on telly or some, you know, the people in power. They want to create something that matters, because the way I see it, and I think the way young people see it, is they've got one life to do something special, to have an impact, to leave the world a better place. And this is what I want to do. And young people still have big ideas and ideals. And why are these being shut down and laughed at in a way, you know, sometimes to be mocked because they're not as important as having this huge salary. So it's this terrible disconnect, really, and it's hard to reconcile these two ideas. I'm just trying to, like, personally, I'm trying to be a good role model for young people. I've worked with young people for a long time. I've been a teacher. That's my actual day job. I'm no longer teaching, but for 20 something years I've been a teacher in high schools, working with young people who I see are being let down and told lies, really. And they have to, you know, eventually in through their 20s and 30s and 40s, they're finding their own way and working out what matters to them and how they can live a meaningful life. But for a while there, it's 16, 17, they're given some messages which are pretty hard to swallow. And I see so many kids who are struggling with depression and anxiety and confusion. And I think a lot of it, not all of it, obviously, there are very many factors, but for some of these young people, they're just having trouble working out, how do I be me? How do I live this a true, authentic and positive life? So I guess, that's pretty deep and meaningful. When I start a novel, I don't start off going, this is what I want to talk about. But, you know, as you heard, I started the novel thinking about what if I was in a rock band and I had one weekend to record a song. But through the revision process, I start to tap into my characters and get to know them. And, of course, that comes through getting to know myself. So all of these things that I care about find their way into the story. And, I'm glad. I'm proud of the way that they have.
It's a really bizarre and shocking thing to, you know, the idea of you having a teenager coming up and asking that. And it's like, really, unless
it's happened more than once, I can tell you that. And it is, it was really shocking. And a number of schools, like I said, particularly these wealthy schools where so much is about, finding careers that are going to be reliable and make you money. Nothing's reliable. Come on. That's a total lie. But it's something that makes you money. I am Andrew. I'm glad that you're shocked as much as I was.
Kids, unless you are refurbishing the family tennis court, you should not be asking about what a net is worth. Oh, I tried in my tread. I tried out about three different versions of that joke and we'll cut that.
I think it's as good as it can be, that joke. I can't imagine improving on that. So,
well, first one was about fishing and then butterflies, and then I was like, nah, we can't be advocating catching. No. All right. Let's moving on. I actually want to jump a little ahead. We might come back to the music, but you were talking there about the real impact that this sort of thinking and these sort of pressures can have on young people. And Eva, she is extremely wound up about her future. I joked in the intro, I hope everyone picked up that this was meant to be joking, you know, that if she didn't do it in year 12, she was just too old. The world has left her behind. And there's this idea that it's her last shot of making it. There's this scene where you show us the impact of this on her mental health. But particularly, and this is perhaps, I think, the most interesting, the most tragic, how she's normalized this. All this stress that she puts herself through, it's something that she just sees as part of her life, like that she just, why wouldn't you just deal with it? What did you want to explore here with this and the impact of mental health and how kids are dealing with mental health?
Yeah, great. Thanks, Andrew. So as adults, we know that there are multiple opportunities. We know that you continue to have chances to change your life and to make mistakes if you want to try something new. But when you're a teenager, you're getting all of these messages, and they still are. Like, this happened when I was, you know, in high school, and it's still going on, that you have to do really well in this subject and you have to get an A or whatever mark on this assignment, because if you don't, it's going to affect your grade, it's going to affect your ATAR, and it means you won't get into the course that you want and the rest of your life will be doomed. I mean, that's exaggerated a bit, but actually not entirely. When you talk to teenagers now, they have a sense that every single thing they do right now matters. It's this cumulative, it's like an effect of whatever they do. And if they don't achieve it, it's disaster. It's coming from parents, it's coming from school, because, you know, they've got however many subjects, say six subjects, but each of the teachers is saying, you have to give everything to this subject, and they're being, and to do other things as well, they might have jobs. So they've got so much pressure on them. And meanwhile, their brains are actually still developing. They're trying to work out who they are and what they believe in and who their friends are and what they want to do. And there's all of that pressure on them. So I do exaggerate that a bit with the book with Eva thinking, if I don't get this break in the music industry now, it'll never happen. And it feels a bit much to us as adults reading this, but to a teenager, it feels real. And the other thing with Eva is she doesn't really know what she wants to do. She loves music. It's her secret passion. But she's in year 12 and everyone continually is saying, what do you want to do? And here's a problem I have with that. How are you supposed to know at 17 what you want to do with your life? I hated that as a 17-year-old, because when you're 17, you're thinking, I've got most of my life ahead of me. I want to be able to try many things. Why is it just one thing? And I remember that pressure on me, and I wanted to do everything. And of course, you have to choose one thing. So that pressure of choosing is weighing really heavily on Eva. She's good at politics and law. It's her best subject at school. And you know how it is at school. The teachers go, oh, you're good at this, you should do this. And she does the online careers, the careers aptitude quizzes, and they're saying, you would be good at law. And she's like, you keep telling me this, but will I like it? I don't know. It might be terrible. But this is what year 12s and year 11s and year 10s are thinking about. Like, how am I supposed to make this massive decision? So Eva's thinking, okay, fine, everyone keeps telling me I should do law, let's go along with that. But inside, she harbors this desire to be a muso. And so that's why she thinks, she's kind of tossing a coin and leaving it up to chance, really. She's like, right, I'm going to have this one last shot at winning Unearthed High, and if I don't, fine, I'll do law. And I'll give up on my dream. And part of the story, of course, is you can be many things. You know, I was a teacher and a writer and many other things at the same time. You don't have to just be one thing. You don't have to give up on a dream. You're allowed to, be multifaceted, and you're allowed to change your mind and start again. So, yeah, even though she's wound up, and I get that. She, in her mind, has good reason to be.
Mm. In the character of Mim, we haven't introduced Mim yet, but she is not a member of the band. She has joined the group to document their creative process. She is adopting the style of cinema verite. So she's just going to be a fly on the wall. She swears it's just going to be a fly on the wall. Read the book to find out how that plays out. But Mim is very much a character who is putting herself forward. And one of the ways she does that is she's very involved in environmental action in her school and at large. Was there a deliberate contrast here? Because, of course, Mim has taken up a cause there that really does say, actually, the action now is everything. The action that we take now does have these enormous cascading consequences. But she deals with this differently to Eva.
She does. I really needed a fly on the wall character, because for these four characters, the ones in the band, Eva, Cooper, Ant, and Ruby, it's very intense. And they're all very different personalities, but they're all having a very intense experience. And I needed a little bit of distance for myself, but also for the reader to be able to look at it with a different perspective. So she is so lovely. I didn't really know Mim at the start, but over the revising, I came to love her. She's one of my favorite characters. So as you say, she's year 12, she's filming this for a documentary project, and she's got some real practical advice. Eva's not really sure about Mim at the start. She's like, what are you doing here? She thinks she has a crush on Cooper, and she's got reasons to be suspicious. But Mim brings a different dynamic to the rehearsal, and I'm so glad I have her there. And in fact, Eva's pretty glad that she's there as well. So she's a real source of comfort and solidarity, as well as other things which I won't go too much into.
AJ and I nod and wink at each other there. Read the book, people, read the book. It does help that the band are stuck in the studio. It's a little cabana out the back of Cooper's dad's place. They've got everything they need except for the stuff that they don't have when they realize they are stuck. Tell me about working creatively with these ideas that kind of flow on from COVID, from the idea of being locked in somewhere and the way they sort of think through that, and also I guess a little bit about the way Eva's thoughts on life play out, particularly her love life.
Okay, great. So I love the idea of a restricted setting. I like a small setting where you can't have freedom to roam. It creates this pressure cooker environment. Mm-hmm. And in fact, when I look at my past novels, each of them has some element of that. For instance, Zack and Mia starts in a hospital ward, and the main character, one of the main characters, Zach, is stuck in isolation, so he can't leave. But I love that. I love being able to kind of like a director, really, a film director, say, look at them from all angles and have them in a fishbowl kind of thing. So that was a really great element for me to use to really create more tension, but also to observe them. So we've got the studio, the granny flat, really, and it begins on a Friday night and things go wrong. As you say, things go pear-shaped, and Eva says, no one is leaving until we get the song done. And so she makes this rule, no one actually leaves the door, is able to step over the door unless they're out of the band. So I do draw on lockdown, and they call it lock-in, creative lock-in in the story, because it, yeah, we all know what lockdown / lock-in is. As soon as you say you can't leave, that's all you want to do. And you think of all the things that, as you say, that are outside that you can't have. So it really helped me dial up the tension there with that. And with Eva, right, she doesn't just come at the weekend thinking, I really, really need to record this song. This will be life-changing. So she has that main want. But I've given her a second want, because I like to make life really hard for my characters. And Eva's second desire is Cooper Hunter. So he has been her friend I'm going to put inverted commas around friend for a while. In fact, they did get together in year 10, for a very short time. And she's been holding on to this crush for him for the last 2.5 years. So part of the appeal of creating this band and being in this lock-in situation is to have this time with Cooper, which is both deliriously wonderful but also terrifying, because, as you said at the start, how are you supposed to create something new? And how are you supposed to concentrate on a song when the love of your life is sitting right across from you? So I wanted to look at that. I'm going to be frank here. When I was 16, 17, I had crushes on people who I wouldn't have crushes on now, really, who I look back and think about these guys and I'm like, really, what did you see in that person? And I think about the way that I behaved, you know, I was a respectable person. I was in all the school plays. I was trying in my subjects, but internally I was consciously aware of where a certain someone would be in the school, not in a stalkery, you know, dangerous kind of way, but just hyper vigilant with my feelings with this other person. So I wanted to talk about that a little bit and how it can really sway your behavior, but also your self-esteem. When someone doesn't treat you the way you deserve and would like to be treated, it can definitely impact your self-esteem. So yeah, there's a lot. I'm going to say this is the most autobiographical story I've ever written. I've never been in a rock band, but I've had these feelings about a Cooper Hunter or Cooper Hunters. And I've had these feelings about, yeah, wanting a special life, having big dreams and working out what to do with them. I haven't given too much away about my past self. We're all embarrassed, aren't we? We all go, why? What did I see in that person?
Do you know what, Amanda? I hear your high school alum are big Thank listeners you. Of Final Draft. I'm sure they're going to, yeah. I got to acknowledge, though, I think you would do just fine, like you right now, with that whole sort of like concentrating, focusing, because you've done a magnificent job. This will all be cut for the podcast. I'm just going to acknowledge right now that AJ has done just terrifically, as one of my cats has just trooped back and forth past the screen. It was hilarious. You were trying to stifle your laughter. This is Winnie. This is actually a different one.
Oh, hi, Winnie. You did have for quite a time a Winnie cat tail mustache going on top of your current mustache. So, yeah.
I don't know if it picked up it on your special. Speakers, but yeah, I just whacking the microphone. Let's see if we can get back on track. Please don't knock over a pile of books. This is real, everyone. This is what the recording process is like. I've completely lost my thread. It doesn't help that I've actually mixed and matched my questions to follow the thread of our conversation.
I can barely see you for the cattail swiping across the screen.
There it is. The creative
Winnie
process.
Steals the show.
Are you regretting that you didn't put more of Cooper's dog in the book?
He stole enough of the show as it is, I think. He, poor Ringo, I needed him there as a plot device. So I didn't give too much of him, but just when I needed him to be there, I brought him out. And for those not knowing what I'm talking about, it's all in the book and I better not say any more about that.
No, and it is really hard to know what to and not to say. There are some really great reveals, there are some interesting twists, but it is a very character-driven book. And so sometimes just talking about the characters is a reveal in itself. And I'll acknowledge that as I throw into the next question, where I want to talk about watching the band come together. Because, of course, it is not a fait accompli that they will just gel. I was hoping you could tell me a little bit about the scenes where they jam, though. You've already revealed you're not a muso. How did you get into
Damn
that?
Damn it, I shouldn't have said that.
How did you get
I
into
I should
that
have pretended I was amazing.
Well, then it would just seem like, oh, I just wrote what I knew. How do you get into that creative space, not sort of being in that jamming space?
Well, luckily, I I'm a big researcher. I'm a total nerd and I want to get everything right, so Reddit, a lot of time on Reddit, hearing people back and forth talking about how to be a good keyboardist, what are the best methods for songwriting. So I was on Reddit a lot. My partner plays the guitar, so he has some experience in that, and I'd get him to play things for me and I'd just watch. And going to a lot of bands. Look, this is great. I can say for research, I went to some gigs. I went to some music festivals, especially with young people, and just really observing their dynamic on stage. Things like the shoes that they wear. I'm a bit obsessed with shoes and as a source of symbolism for characterization. And the other source of research was actually a local band here in Perth called Spicy Water. They're a young, early 20s band who I know via one of their mums, and she said, and the mum said, you've got to go hang out with my son's band, Spicy Water. And I'm like, I'm just going to go and hang out with it. And she insisted. So it was really great. I'm really pleased. So they let me sit in like a weird creeper person on their rehearsals. So I'd go to their rehearsal space.
You were Mim. You were Mim.
I was Mim, but I wasn't. I should have been filming. I felt too self-conscious. I just sat in the corner like a creeper and just took notes. But it was so useful because I'd never been in a rehearsal studio. So one of the first things that I noticed was cables everywhere. You can't step anywhere. There's foot pedals, there's amps, there's pick tins, there's coffee cups. And I'm like, okay, write that down. Cables everywhere. And so just that sense of like organized chaos, I guess. And then they talked to me about the gear and I put a lot of that in there as well. So I got to hang out with them a number of times and watch them play. And then I guess the rest of it was me imagining, like, what would it be like to be Eva? Because I'm using first person perspective, so I'm seeing the world through Eva's eyes. What would it be like to be Eva and watch and be in this very intimate space with these people who are so close to me, watch them transform from regular teenager to focused muso? And it feels like there is this transformation when you step into that role, like you put... As soon as you've got your instrument, you turn it on, you transform. And so that was really fun bringing that to life in my mind. So I did draw on lots of different resources, I guess, and then the rest was up to imagination. So I'm glad you say that it rings true. Any music mistakes of my own, I think I've got, may have a couple of small errors in there, but we can overlook those.
It is really interesting and so important to think about how you can transform and what that means. I mean, I know for myself, we were talking off air about how long I've been doing Final Draft now, and I've moved from I'm still kind of like a nervous fanboy when I'm talking with authors because I just love and respect literature so much, but I am also very aware of now that when I start an interview, I stop, I look away before I turn back, and I literally know that I have a voice that is the voice that I do Final Draft in, which is a little bit different to my other voice. And all of that sort of stagecraft, I think you capture the gestational, like the embryonic phases for each of them, because they all have very different personalities.
Oh, good. Thanks. Yeah, that was very important to me, of course, to have this contrast, which creates conflict, but it also creates interest. Mm. And I got to know them so well, and some I got to know... quicker than others. Someone like Ant, he didn't reveal himself to me for a while, for instance. So through the revision, I got to know them. But they were really fun and I got to really like them. Even when they're doing things that are kind of a bit dodgy and a bit dubious, I still really care about them. And like you say, they're at the early stages of the band. Like they're not 5 years into some successful career. They're young, they're working things out, they're nervous, but they really, each of them comes at it with a different angle. Each of them has a different motivation for being in the band, but each of them take it really seriously. Mm. And I love that about creative people, whether that's musos or artists, you know, they come at their craft and go, this matters. Even if no one's ever going to hear this song, mm, I feel the same way. If I'm writing something and, you know, a lot of what I write, I don't seek to be published. It's just because I want to explore something, or it's for me, or I come at it with this sense of I don't want to say perfectionism, but care. I want to do the best job I can, even if, like I said, there's no audience at all. So it's that respect for the art, and I think all of my characters have that. I'm so proud. I talk about them like they're real, and I'm glad that you do as well, because they feel real to me.
Well, I did, and I did really like them, and I did take their creative process seriously. And that might actually be the segue I was looking for, because I've got a question that doesn't quite fit. It fit when I was reading my interview notes from start to finish, where I had a thread, but then I went all over the place. But so we're going to improvise. We're improvising, call this a bridge to the final chorus. And it's back to creativity. There was there's a really great bit where you have Eva describing the writing of Tongue Twisted. So Tongue Twisted's a song she's brought to the band. It's going to win Unearthed High. And the way she's figured this out, she's mapped out the hit elements of past Unearthed High winners on a spreadsheet. People can go read how that works out for her. I'm not going to reveal that, but it just so happened that at the same time as I was reading one song, I came across a bit of a factoid that Rivers Cuomo from Weezer had done just that for an album a few years back. And I actually wondered whether you had picked up on this, because you mentioned this book started in 2017, and this actually was from Weezer's 2017 album. So two questions here. Are you a Weezer fan, and how do you feel about the idea of this kind of algorithmic creativity?
That is fantastic. Weezer, yeah, okay, don't mind. I did not know about that. That's fantastic. So, yeah, I love talking about creativity. It's one of my favorite things to do I wrote a PhD. I'm such a nerd. I did a PhD on the topic of wonder and creativity and how it actually works. And when I go into schools and festivals, this is what I talk about. Wow, this is one of the things that I talk about. And so I wanted to explore that. Eva has her own creative process before the book begins. She writes songs, but she does it in an unhurried way. It's very organic, the way that I do it, actually. So she takes something she hears, like a snippet on Triple J, for instance, and it becomes a line in her journal, and then she creates, turns that into a phrase, and it takes months for her to create a song, and she noodles around with it on the piano at home, and that's what I do. But in this pressure cooker scenario of this band and having one weekend to not very long to create a new song, she feels the pressure. So, and she also is struggling with her own self-doubt. She thinks, well, I haven't gotten anywhere with my songs the last 3 years. I'm obviously rubbish, so I'm going to have to come up with a new strategy. So she does this because she's desperate, because it's year 12, it's her last chance. And as you say, she creates a spreadsheet. And it's not terrible. Like, I don't think I didn't write the song, but I don't think in my mind, I don't think it's terrible. But this is what you do when you're grasping at straws. And I go to schools all the time and run creative writing workshops, and I see what students do. They're like, how do I do this? And some people draw on things, you know, like this, that have been cobbled together from other stories, say. But part of the book, right, part of my process was working out, what does creativity mean to Eva, and what does creativity mean to all of these people, and how does it feel to me? So after that attempt of writing a song from a spreadsheet, she develops other strategies. So through the course of the story, for instance, rather than the four band members, they break them up into pairs and they try little jam sessions. She tries writing on her own. She tries... this is early on, it's not too much of a spoiler, but for instance, Cooper gets his textbooks from school and starts pulling lines out of that and just jamming with that. So they're trying out different methods of making something up, because people think creativity is some magical, mystical process where you might get inspiration from a muse or might get inspiration from some other dimension. But really, I think it's just this wonderful process of making connections and playing and asking what if, and other questions as well. So I really did want to look at what creativity means to her. And you can read, as you read the story, you can read it as a process of her discovering what it means to her and how to create something new and how to do it collaboratively as well. For instance, when I was at high school, I always had trouble working in groups. I didn't know how to create something in group projects. I much preferred to work on my own and have that control. But as Eva discovers, you can really benefit if things go right. And if you have the right people around you, you can really benefit from that creative collaboration. So yeah, it was really fun to talk about creativity in this setting. And I draw on my own writing experience, of course.
And so then thinking about that process, and I guess the process of creating together, but also I guess Eva's process of learning the power of creating together, flying really close to the sun here. I'm not intending, this is not meant to actually deal with the novel itself, but more your process. Knowing that this was so important to Eva, but that she also had quite an unhealthy way of looking at, you know, the unearthed high thing and the creative process thing and winning, was it important to you the result that she got? Like when you started this novel, did you have a sense whether you wanted her to be successful or just to learn something about herself?
Oh, good question. The main thing really was for her to learn about herself and some pretty meaningful things. Threaded throughout. It's like if I could go back in time and tell my 17-year-old self anything, these are the things I'm telling Eva. So yeah, that was always the focus for me through as to where the story would end up. And then I had to work out, well, what is actually going to happen? Her goal is to enter and win Unearthed High. And then I had to work out, yeah, and make that decision as a writer, which is really hard to do because A, I'm indecisive, but also B, I don't like endings that really tie everything up either one way or another. So my goal, and I'm trying to avoid any spoilers here, but my goal in ending a story is to give the reader enough satisfaction that this chapter in a way has ended for them, but yet something else is waiting to happen. So yeah, I'm going to answer your question by saying the ending of the book is what I thought would happen. And because sometimes endings change as I go along with Zach and Mia, for instance, I started that and I was sure I knew what the ending was, but halfway through I changed my mind completely. So with one song, it changed. And I know we're just talking around the ending because neither of us wants to spoil it, but It both of those things were important, but more so Eva's personal journey. That's the heart of the book.
That something else is waiting to happen. I think that's a pretty great ending for anything. And maybe that's a pretty great ending for this conversation. I am speaking with AJ Betts. We are discussing her new novel, One Song. AJ, thank you so much for taking the time.
Oh, thank you for having me.
That is it for today's episode. Thank you again to AJ Betts. Thank you, Amanda. And AJ Betts' new book is called One Song. It is out now. Final Draft is recorded on the lands of the Darug and the Gunungurra people. The show is produced and presented by Andrew Popel. Stay in touch. You will find Final Draft on social media. Just look for at Final Draft 2SER. Subscribe in your podcast app. It means a new episode of the show. Well, a couple of times a week we have bonuses. We have full-length conversations. Also, look, are you enjoying it? Are you a regular listener? Are you a regular listener who's been thinking about giving us a little rating? Please do. It means other book lovers are going to find incredible Australian authors. My name's Andrew Popel. I'm going to be back very soon. I'm not even going to say next week. There's going to be a bonus episode before that. But stay tuned. There will be more incredible Australian authors here on Final Draft. Until then, happy reading. Bye for now.